Okay, maybe we'll start now. I'd like to welcome everyone once again for, I don't know what number we're up to, in our series about kashrus issues. And specifically, or more specifically, I should say, we are discussing various takanas derabbanan, certain things that Chazal instituted because they realized we would be subject to a long, difficult galus, long, difficult exile, and will be amongst non-Jews for many, many, unfortunately, thousands of years, 2,000 years. And therefore, it's necessary to build safeguards around, in certain areas of kashrus, for two basic reasons. One reason that we've been discussing, these are the overarching reasons. One reason is because of kashrus, because there's certain areas where very easily, if we have a non-Jew there, maybe they're not as sensitive as we are with kashrus issues, and therefore they'll mess it up. They'll mess it up. And then the Jew who is eating whatever the non-Jew made will be in violation of a kashrus, whatever kashrus halacha there is. Second reason is because of what we call chasnus, because of intermarriage. Again, as I mentioned in a previous share, especially us in America, maybe even, unfortunately, even more so, we in Southern California understand this all too well about how the danger of intermarriage is so prevalent. And one of the first areas, of course, where socialization and friendships begin is with food and drink. Now, for tonight, we're going to speak about a specific area where there was a takana derabbanan, and that is by wine. By wine. The Chofetz Chaim in the Bir Halacha says by Purim. It says we see that the downfall, I'm sure everyone appreciates this, the downfall of many people in Tanakh came as a result of wine or alcohol. We could talk about Noah. We could talk about Lot. We could talk about many, many, many people who the downfall or something pivoted in their life because of wine. Also, unfortunately, when Klal Yisrael got involved with the Benos Moav, wine was a very important factor in that one of the first instances of intermarriage and Jews socializing too much with the non-Jew. So we all appreciate that wine is a very powerful vehicle when we talk about food or drink, it's something we have to be very careful with. And as we go through the halacha, I think I mentioned a couple of shiurim ago that certain hashgachas, and that's one of the things we touched on last week, you need maybe a minimal hashgacha. Again, with the example I think we talked about was, let's say, a hashgacha on water. So, you know, we have such concepts as a yosem and nichnas, somebody coming in and out. It doesn't have to be that they're coming in and out. We did discuss this by Chol Yisrael, coming in and out all the time, or even on that day. It could be within a year, they come once or twice at an irregular interval. Wine, I think I mentioned, is the opposite end, is the other end of the spectrum. Wine, as you'll see, needs a super-duper hashgacha. Needs a super duper hashgacha. But before we get to that, let's, again, some people are already realizing noticing things maybe that you didn't notice before as a result of these series of shurim about kashrus or hashgacha or things you buy. There's also sometimes terms that people banter around which are technically incorrect because maybe they don't know exactly the background. And that will start with tonight. Before I start, I made this little Xerox. Again, I used to do this in Beis Yaakov also. It's a little chart to give you some idea about how wine is produced. It's called From the Vineyard to the Bottle. I stole it from the LA Times a number of years ago. Yeah, if you want to call it that. And it gives you some brief idea how they make wine. Wine could be made in many, many different ways. Of course, it starts with a grape, and the quality of the grape, and different types of grape We know there's table grapes. We know there's wine grapes. There's different climates. There's different soil. All sorts of things which go into wine. And what type of grape is obviously one of the primary factors in winemaking. Again, we in California appreciate this. Maybe besides France, California, Northern California, is very well known for kosher wine. Here in Southern California, we appreciate it because now in Oxnard, which is not so far away from us, there's a major wine, a kosher Ken and winery there. So again, we understand, we appreciate about the importance of climate and soil in making wine. Again, I don't want to get into how they make wine because, again, that's what the Xerox is for. But the wine that you see described in the Xerox is really like a really nice wine. Is a way, because this article that accompanied this chart was talking about wine tasting and expensive wines. But obviously there's also what we know is called jug wine, cheap wine. And cheap wine is made a little differently, to say the least. Cheap wine obviously is made with not as good material. So one of the ways to make cheap wine is, again, after maybe all these, after good wine is made, but sometimes what they do is they take the skins of wine, of crushed grapes already. So they've already gotten the juice out of it, and they pour water over it. And then they let the water sit there, and it takes up some of the wine, the grape taste. But it's not really like grape juice from the original crushing. It's, and they do that. Maybe they do that a second time and a third time, and they use those grape skins. They recycle them, so to speak, over and over again. Sometimes, obviously, the power of the crushed grape is beginning to dwindle, so maybe they have to add some alcohol or some outside helpers to give the wine, give it some wine taste. Those are obviously cheaper wines. The closer or the more we follow this chart and use the original grape juice, so to speak, from the original crushing, the better the wine would be. Again, assuming that the grapes are good quality grapes and so on and so forth. But that's one of the ways that, again, they make cheaper wines by recycling the grape skins. That's one of the things they do. Now, we have to understand that there are, like I said before, two different terms which make people mess up. We know in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, and unfortunately, Lahavdil, the same thing applied in idolatry, there was such a thing called a nesech. A nesech. We know that in the Beis Hamikdash, Lahavdil, Lahavdil, they did this also, and that is when a person brought a korban, so then accompanying that korban was a certain amount of wine that you brought along with the korban. And that was brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Some of it was poured on the Mizbeach. You art scroll connoisseurs here probably noticed that at the beginning of davening, I'll try to find it here, the Rabbi Art Scroll, here you might notice on the bottom of page 42, there's a little chart. And it talks about the different types of animals that were brought or could be brought for a korban. So a par, an isle, a keves. So along with it came a certain amount of flour, and there is the chart explaining that. Then with it was volume of wine libation. Right, depending on what type of animal was brought, a certain amount of wine had to be brought. Now, this is going to be important for later. That wine was poured on the Mizbeach. Okay? So that act, as you could see throughout the Torah, we talk about v'nis kol yayin revi'i sahin, you had to bring a quarter of a hin of nesach. There was some wine that was poured on the Mizbeach. L'naseach means to pour. Nesach. So that was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Lahavdil, not to compare, it was also done in idolatry. And therefore, we have this term called Yayin Nesach. Yain nesach means wine that was poured. Wine that was poured. What does that mean? If there was a bottle of wine and a non-Jew poured off, they didn't pour usually all the wine to Avodah Zarah, then there wouldn't be any wine. But what they would do is, in the service of their idol, or I think even some Christians do this, the Catholics do it even till today, is they had a bottle of wine, they would pour off a small amount with the intention that it's to serve that deity, that Avodah Zarah, and they would drink the rest of the bottle. But since part of that wine was poured in the function of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship, the rest of the wine is prohibited. This is a halacha from the Torah. Not only is it prohibited, not only is it prohibited, and prohibited from the Torah, but not only are you not allowed to eat or drink or consume it, you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. So if you want to go back to when we were talking about milk, hooks, and flesh, it's carne and leche. So let's say you have a Christian brother's wine. I'm not saying a Christian brother's wine, maybe it's just commercially made, I don't know, but let's say. And it could be that some of that wine, a church around town, I don't know, is having a blowout sale, right? And so they're selling some of their wine. Could be. So now, some of that wine was poured on an altar and the rest of the bottle. So what's wrong with it? It's just wine, right? What could be wrong with it? Answer is, it's prohibited from the Torah. That's called yayin nesach. Wine that was poured, not only are not allowed to eat or drink it, right? Eat meaning, you know, add it to, you know, Julia Child style, and adding it to almost anything you might eat. But, and you can't drink it, but you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. It's asur b'hana, meaning that if you want to give it to your Saint Bernard, right, or whatever type of dog, it could be a sheepdog, whatever, it could be a chihuahua. But I'm not recommending it, even kosher wine, right? But let's say you cannot derive benefit out of it. And we discussed how that's benefit when we talked about milchiks and fleishiks. So the prohibition of yayin nesach is very severe. We're not even allowed to derive benefit out of the wine. And again, that prohibition is a prohibition from the Torah.
So if that was a kosher mevushel bottle?
You're way heavy. Okay. Don't get it, right? Okay. We're taking steps, okay? Now, you can understand, as I mentioned before, Chazal have two jobs. One job is to transmit the Mesorah to the next generation. And we've discussed that before, so I'm not going to get into that now. The other idea is to make a fence around a prohibition from the Torah. So here we go. Here's a prohibition from the Torah. Yayin nesach. So now, what Chazal said, again, because of the reasons we discussed before about the dangers of wine, Chazal made an Issur D'Rabbanan. And it's called Stam Yenam. Stam Yenam. We discussed the word Stam. We were talking about milk last week. Stam Yenam is just their regular wine, meaning that really from the Torah, let's say Ernest and Julio, they're making wine. Ernest and Julio, for all I don't know, they could be atheists, or maybe they're just making the wine for commercial reasons, which they're definitely doing. But nobody's standing there pouring off a little of the wine for the reasons of their religion, right? They're just commercially making it. So from the Torah, would that wine be prohibited? No, there's nothing wrong with that wine. But obviously, Chazal are worried about all the reasons we started off discussing, the dangers of wine, intermarriage, all that type of stuff. So what they do, they jumped in and made an Issur D'Rabbanan. What's that Issur D'Rabbanan? That Issur D'Rabbanan means their wine, just their wine. And what does that mean, just their wine? That means if a goy produced wine, Ernest and Julio make wine, it has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. They have nothing, no religious idea in mind. Not at all. They're just making wine. Let's say you had Joe Atheist wine, right? There's no religion involved here. But Chazal stepped in and said that wine is stam, it's just their regular wine, and that wine automatically is prohibited. Now we hold, there's a difference of opinion, but we hold, and it's generally accepted, that when you have just a regular wine of a goy, not a wine that was, again, potentially you can have a wine that's Yain Nesav today. Again, from a Catholic church, maybe some Zoroastrians out there, maybe some Hindus, I don't know, maybe they do, I think they do things like that, believe it or not. So that wine, again, would be prohibited from the Torah. But just a regular wine, you go, I don't know, you go to Vendome, you go wherever you go to Rouse, and you get a Gallo wine, whatever, another type of wine, Chateau Lafite, whatever, for $50,000 for one sip. So again, I assume the French are not into religion anymore. They haven't been into it a long time. So again, with that wine, you, from the Torah, you'd be allowed to drink, but midrabanan, you're not allowed to drink it. Now again, we hold that stam yinam, regular wine of a goy, is prohibited in consuming. In other words, you can't eat or drink it. Can't add it to your, I don't know what, whatever it may be that you add wine to, I have no idea, as far as food is concerned, and you can't drink it. Could you get derive benefit from it? We say yes. It's a notch lower. It's a notch lower. Okay? So those are the two terms which everybody messes up, right? People say, you can't drink that, it's Yain Nesav. Probably not. Highly unlikely. I mean, it could be, but highly unlikely. Really, if you're using the proper term, you'd say, you can't drink that because it's Stam Yinam. Stam Yinam, which is more likely it is. Now, so that makes it kind of simple, but it's not so simple. Because Chazal took it further. Again, for the reasons we discussed before. And they said that a wine that's a Jewish wine could also become usur because of Stam Yinam. Obviously, a Jewish wine could become Yain Nesach also. I mean, I don't know. Let's say Juanita is working in your house, and it's December 25th, and yeah, I don't know what's going on with her. And she takes one of your bottles of wine, and she pours it out, some, just a little bit, out with the intent of Avodah Zarah, right? So obviously, the rest of your wine, the rest of that bottle, is Yain Nesach. Bad news, right? Really bad. I would tend to think that's unlikely. Right? I tend to think that's unlikely. So what's the most likely case that we have? We have another case. In other words, again, wine produced by a non-Jew, even if he's an atheist, is automatically Stam Yinam. Again, unless there's a hashgach on it, which, you know, which we're going to discuss is a hard thing to do, but we'll get to that. But the bigger issue is that even if you have Jewish wine, kosher wine, that kosher wine could also become usur. How? Now, this is very, people get this mixed up or don't understand the halacha clearly. And again, this is the, Chazal came down really hard on wine. Really hard on wine because of the reasons we mentioned before. Now, you can have a bottle of wine in your house and that wine could become usur. How? Kosher wine. Right? Fill in the blank, whatever company, I don't want to give a, no, they haven't paid me to mention their name, so I'm not. And I did mention one already anyways. Now, a kosher wine could become usur also. How? Number one, if a goy touched the wine, and we're talking about touching the wine, I want to make it very clear, we're talking about that the goy actually touched the wine. We're not talking about the bottle. Talking about the wine, the finger is purple now, like not because they voted in Iraq a few years ago, right? But they actually touched the wine. So if a non-Jew actually touched kosher wine, that wine becomes Stam Yinam, you cannot drink it anymore, or eat it, right? Other possibility. Now again, I have a kosher wine. If a goy poured that wine, I'll give you a great example, any wedding, or whatever, right? Any simcha, and the guy's walking around, and they come after, you know, they start serving the main meal, and they come around, could you have, sir, do you want, you know, whatever it is, whatever, white or red, right? They have both going there, and they pour it for you. Okay, we'll discuss why that's not a problem. But potentially, if they did that with a kosher wine, so that wine will now be usur. Even though they didn't have Avodah Zarah in mind, but still, the act of pouring it, they didn't actually touch the wine, right? Their finger's not wet. But But still, that wine would be usur.
Is it stamienum or yainum?
Stamienum. They don't have any avodah zarah in mind. If they have avodah zarah in mind, you're right, it would be yainum. But we're assuming there's not, people aren't so frum anymore. So that's what we're assuming. Now, another possibility is that even if the goy didn't pour the wine, and even if the goy did not touch actually the wine, but if the goy opened up a valve, you know, like I have these big, one of those big casks that you might see over there in the Xerox copy, one of those big casks, so you all know that what they have is eventually they have a spigot that goes into it, and they open up a little valve, and they maybe taste it to see how it's doing. So now, if a goy did that, they didn't touch the wine, they didn't pour the wine, but they caused the wine to flow. So the rest of the wine in that cask is tamienum. Now, to illustrate this, somebody told me that they were working as a mashkiach at a production of wine, locally, in other words, in Oxnard or wherever, you know, not far. So, for some reason, there was a rubber hose running across the floor of one of the rooms that this person was in. And all of a sudden, a non-Jew walked in and stepped, not on purpose, but just walked in and stepped on the hose. Just walked on their way, right? It's not like they trampled on it, right? And looked up there. They just walked, and this person saw that they stepped on the hose. The hose was carrying some grape juice, soon to be wine, after it's fermented and all that. He immediately told the Rav, they threw out that wine. Because they were worried that he stepped on the hose, it stopped the flow, and then obviously when he lifted up his foot, it continued the flow. This is the story that I was told. So that illustrates the third case. Okay? Now, what's important to remember, we'll get to another case where the wine will become usur also, but what's important to remember that if a goy touched the bottle, or if a goy just moved the bottle, let's say in the refrigerator, they just moved the bottle, the wine does not become stamienum. A lot of people think not this way. Now, it could be they just don't know the halacha, but there's another reason why maybe they get confused, and we'll get to that later. So just hold off on that. But again, they have to actually touch the wine or cause the wine to flow or pour. That would make it stamienum. Now, another case where kosher wine could be knocked off is if the wine was left in the possession of a non-Jew. If kosher wine was left in the possession of a non-Jew, so then the wine becomes stamienum, it's usur. Okay? That's another case, as I think number four, that how we can have not a kosher wine, that now becomes prohibited wine. Now, I'm sure all of you are wondering, wait. If you're saying that any wine that's left in the possession of a non-Jew is prohibited, so does that mean we have only Satmar Hasidim driving the XYZ kosher wine cross country? Or forget cross country. Let's say from up north. Or let's say from Oxnard to Pico Robertson. So all of a sudden we have only frum Jews driving? Because after all, when they're transporting all this wine, the wine is in their possession. So based upon what I just said, all that wine should become usur. So there's two answers. Either maybe yeah, maybe they do have from people driving it. I tend to doubt that. The answer is that wine, and this really gets back to what we were discussing by meat and other things, if wine is not sealed once, but double sealed, if wine is double sealed, so then even if the non-Jew had possession of it, it's still okay. Why? Simple. Because we have protection here, so to speak. If he did something to the wine, or she, right? It could be a woman too, right, Mrs. Freeman? It's not just men. But if the non-Jew did something to that wine, we'd see it. How would we see? The seals. And like I said, because of how strict we are by wine, it has to be a double seal. Double seal. Remember, by meat, one seal would be enough. But by wine, it has to be a double seal. Now, there's a whole thing in a halacha, what would be considered a double seal. But next time you look at wine, again, don't ask questions yet because we have to define this a little more in a second. But wine, you'll see very often, somehow, has a double seal on it. They have a double seal on it. And again, that's a whole discussion. But you'll, if you look closely, after we finish defining what wine is, then you'll see there's a double seal, somehow, some way. And again, what is exactly a double seal, according to halacha, is a whole to-do. But wine would have to have a double seal on it. If it has a double seal, then a goy could stack it, a goy could transport it, a goy could do anything, because there's no problem.
Including on it?
Including on it, right. Well, as long as it stays sealed, yeah. You could go to Vendome, I guess. Costco. I don't know, maybe. Whatever. And buy wine from them as long as it's double sealed. Now, there's a couple other things with wine that is extremely important. Again, because of the severity of wine, it's not like other halachas. But there's another way kosher wine could become non-kosher wine. And that is, you don't even need a non-Jew. And that is, again, because of the severity of wine, and the reasons we discussed before, the halacha is that even a machalo Shabbos b'farhesia. I don't think we had this in until this point. We didn't have it by Bishul, right? If you have a non-from Jew cooking for you, again, you have to watch over them and stuff like that. But if they cook from beginning to end, the food is fine. By wine, if a machal Shabbos v'hesia, we'll define that in a second. If a machal Shabbos v'hesia, a Jew who desecrates Shabbos publicly, that's a... does one of the things we mentioned before, touches the wine, pours the wine, and opens the spigot, one of those type of things, so the wine also becomes osir. Now this is huge for all of us. Okay? Now before we go further, this idea of someone who desecrates Shabbos publicly is not a simple matter. It's not a simple matter. Exactly who, so to speak, if you want to call it this, qualifies to be a machal Shabbos parhesia. Therefore, if they touch the wine or pour the wine, it osers the wine. It's not so simple. There's a gamut of opinions, but many poskim hold that when we talk about machal Shabbos parhesia, we're not talking about, you know, one of these run-the-mill non-religious Jews in Los Angeles. Usually, most poskim would say most non-religious Jews we have in Los Angeles are under the category of what we call a tinok shenishba, a child who's taken captive. In other words, they violate Shabbos or do whatever they do, or don't do whatever they do, not out of spite or not out of anger or not out of rebellion or not, but rather because of ignorance. So that is a different story. So again, if you'd ask many poskim, they would say that your typical non-firm person today, if they would touch the wine, pour the wine, it would not necessarily osir it. Now again, you have to speak, it's not so simple. There's some opinions say the other way. Some people say that since we live in the information age and somebody could look up all sorts of stupidity and find information about that, so wouldn't you be a little curious about your Jewish background? So check that out also. So again, that's a complicated issue, but there is area to be lenient about a non-from Jew who touches the wine. But again, it's not so simple, either way. But we do have to be aware that by wine, there is a bigger issue than by almost anything else. That a non-from Jew, not only a goy, but even a non-from Jew could potentially mess up kosher wine. Okay, so now the $64,000 question, as they used to say, is, I don't understand the whole thing. The whole thing that I'm sure many people are wondering is, like we said before, so how do you have any kosher affair? You have from Jews pouring the wine? I mean, I'm sure any of you have attended a chasana, unless it was in Borough Park, and even there, I'm not so sure. Or in Williamsburg, But it seems like there's not exactly Frumagin pouring the wine. Go to a restaurant, right? Any upscale, Baruch Hashem, we have a number of upscale kosher restaurants. They'll bring you wine. It doesn't seem like a frum person is serving that wine. So what's going on there? Second problem, obviously, is, wait a minute, a lot of us have non-religious Jews over our house, right? Kiruv and all that type of stuff. So how do you make Kiddush? How do you have a Seder? How do you do all those things? What do you do with the wine? Now you have to realize, we'll get to this a little later, it's not just wine, but anything made from, if a goy would touch the liquid that came out of a grape, so then that becomes a problem. Obviously, if they touch grapes, it's no problem. Only is after they're crushed. But, we know that today, now, grape juice is also a problem. Right? You can't just drink any grape juice. It has to be under hashgacha. Not hashgacha, good hashgacha. But again, the question could also be for those people, such as myself, who don't like wine, so you may be used for kiddush or whatever it is, grape juice, but it's the same halacha. Because it's subject to the halachas we just discussed. So how do you have affairs or whatever you want to call it, chasanas, whatever it may be, dinners, restaurants, where you have kosher, how can there be kosher wine served unless you have a frum person pouring the wine? So the answer is there's one humongous loophole, if you want to call it that, and that is what we call, I'm running out of room here, but hopefully everybody can see this. That's a lamed and that's a shin. Yayin mevushal. Yayin mevushal means cooked wine. Cooked wine. What does that mean? So even in the old days, even amongst non-Jews, if you would pour wine, this applied to Havdil and the Beis HaMikdash also, if you would pour wine in the service of a deity, it would have to be like, you wouldn't bring schlock wine. You wouldn't bring schlock wine. You would want to serve your deity, or Lahadava, hopefully Hashem, with a nice wine. Now, again, it doesn't have to be Chateau Lafitte, you know, like you go to Munchies and you see these $120 wines. You didn't necessarily have to bring that either, right, to go that far. But you had to bring a nice wine. Now, you look on all these things that you saw on that chart that I gave you at the beginning, for those who got it, is by a good wine. It's generally, now, the whole idea of a wine, we all know one of the beautiful things about wine is it gets better with age. First of all, it's only with a good wine, and only if it's stored in a certain way and then kept a certain way, and there's, you know, we all know about wine cellars, that's the whole idea about it. My people who sell wine, cellars with a C. Also spelled differently, but besides that. But also, if a wine was pasteurized or cooked, the wine is frozen in time. That wine is not going to get better with age. It's not going to get better with age. It's an inferior wine. It's been cooked. Therefore, since that wine would not be used to be poured for Avodah Zarah, once the wine is cooked, then even if a goy poured it or touched it or whatever it may be, it's not Stam Yena. It would not be Stam Yena. This is the big loophole, if you want to call it that. Legitimately.
But it could still be
anything. No, it couldn't be anything. Even without. Now, the problem is that when it's produced, before it's pasteurized, before it's cooked, let's put it that way, I don't want to get into pasteurized in a second. Before it's cooked, if a non-Jew came into contact with it, so then it becomes Stam Yenam. And even if you cooked it afterwards, it's no good. So that's the problem that we have, let's say, with some grape juices. If you have a grape juice that, I don't know, whatever company, and there's no hashgacha, you say, well, what's the problem? It was cooked. It was cooked. The answer is, good yontif, it was cooked, but what happened before it was cooked? Before it was cooked, I don't know, whatever amount of time it could be. It could be 5 minutes, it could be an hour, it could be whatever amount of time, depending on the production. If a non-Jew cause it to flow or open it up or whatever it may be. So then it's tam yinam. And cooking it later doesn't help. Okay? So that's why you need a super duper hashgacha when we talk about wine. Because once it's crushed, they, like I said, with that hose case, with the, they have to have eagle eyes. Now don't forget, there are many of our wines that are kosher wines are not mavushal. They are not mavushal. The, I haven't looked because I'm too scared to pick up the bottle. But you know, you go to Munchies, like I said, or other places also, and you get one of these fancy $120 kosher wines. I'm like 99.9% sure those are not cooked. Those are not cooked because of the reasons I said before. It will not make the wine. The wine will not get better with age, and that's what you want. So that wine. So you can ask, well, what? It's double sealed. But once you break that seal and open it up, so then you got to watch it very carefully. I mean, you know, you have to be careful with the wine. Again, a Machal Shabbos pouring it, or a non-Jew using it in some way, shape, or form, then mess up the rest of the wine that's in the bottle. Not only the stuff that's poured out, but the rest of the wine too.
Well, it's occurring to me that there's something significant about the life in the wine. Is there some religious doctrine or something? Because when it's not mevushel, there's life in it. When it's mevushel, there's no more life in it. Is the pouring of the Avodah Zorah have to do with the life?
That's no, I don't. Again, simply, we'll hold off on that because we'll get to the Kabbalah stuff later. But simply, the idea is that's just a more of a jug wine, a cheaper wine. We know that's true. That you know, like I said, the expensive wines that we have today, kosher wines, are not mavushel, are not cooked.
You could call them alive. They're alive. Yeah. They'll get better with age because of the bacteria in it.
Maybe. Again, maybe.
Did you say that there are some cooked ones that are not cooked?
No, I didn't say that, but I will say that. In other words, what the next thing I was going to talk about is, I don't want to get into, I am going to mention it, what is the halacha criterion for something to be cooked? There's a few issues. First of all, to what degree do you have to get that wine, a great product, right? Because it doesn't even have to be wine, it could be grape juice. What degree do you have to get it to in order for it to be considered cooked? And the other issue is, how long do you have to keep it at that level? Because we do have something called flash pasteurization, which is exactly what it sounds like. In other words, they get it very hot for like a second or two, really quick. Then they cool it down right away. So believe it or not, that's not so simple in halacha. Generally, a lot of hashgachas accept that procedure, flash pasteurization, to render a wine mavushel. Again, because it just cooked just for a flash, right? But you have to realize that's not so simple. And some poskim don't accept that. That, you know, like how much does that degrade? How much does that really do? Now, a lot of hashkachas accept that, but you have to realize it's not so simple. Now, again, you have to know the hashkacha. What is their standard? It's not so simple. So, also, the second issue is how hot does it have to be in order for it to be considered mavushel. Now, this is important for us because, again, it always bothered me for years. I remember years ago I asked people in Hashgacha, I'm not taking any credit for this, don't get any ideas, but is all grape juice mavushel? And the answer was, yeah, because they pasteurize it. You know now it's not that way. It's not that way. That we have, for example, a company, I'll mention Kedem, where there are three different types of grape juice. And I don't mean Blush and Concord and I don't know, whatever, something else, right? We're not even talking about that. But there is Mavushal, which means it's cooked, and it would be cooked according to every opinion. Then you have, it says on the bottle, on the back, non-mavushal, which means it wasn't cooked according to any opinion. Therefore, that grape juice, again, is dangerous because, again, if a goy does one of the things we mentioned before, the grape juice is out. Now, I just want to stop here for a second before I go on to level, the middle level, and that is, you might be wondering, well, why do you want non-mavushal wine, grape juice, or whatever? So one reason is, as I said before, because wine, non-mavushal wine is a better wine. Now, don't ask me because I don't like wine, so I can't tell you, but that's what they say, right? And like I said before, the Chateau Lafite, whatever, for $120 is not kosher. It's not mavushal, right? The better wines are not mavushal, so it must be true. I don't know. Even though, let's not get into that. Because of that reason, because the non-mavushal wines are better wines, believe it or not, for certain things, or a lot of things, it's better to use non-mavushal wine or grape juice in performance of a mitzvah. For example, like Friday night, many poskim say that you should not use, now we do, we're a little more lenient in it, but some poskim say you should use non-mavushal wine. Because Kiddush Friday night is from the Torah. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. Arba Kosos at the Seder. A lot of people like to use non-mavushal wine because of the reason we said before. So Arba Kosos, it's a Seder. So there's an idea, because of what we said before, since it's better to use better stuff. So therefore you'll see, this is what, like I said before, you might wonder, well, why don't we just make everything mavushal? Answer is, first of all, we want a better quality if you're talking about wine. Grape juice is not going to make that much of a difference. Still going to taste grape. You can't, I don't think, tell the difference between mavushal grape juice and non-mavushal grape juice. I don't think so. But again, the reason why you want to do that is, let's say Friday night, it's better to use non-mavushal grape juice for Kiddush. Now again, you have to play that off to, if you have non-from people coming over Friday night, or, as we mentioned before, something you really have to think about. You can have somebody who's studying to be a ger, right? So we discussed about Yonta before. But let's say you're having them over for a Shabbos meal. So a very nice person, right? You want to have them over, but boom, here's your problem. So in that case, you're going to want to use mavushal, right? So again, you have to play off these things. So, you know, again, you can't just say across the board, well, we're just going to be mavushal everything. But halakhically, it's not so simple. We sometimes really want to use non-mavushal stuff a lot of times.
So Friday night, you have somebody over who's not Jewish, let's say.
Right.
Just passing the cup, you're saying, is not enough to make it.
Right, but when he drinks it.
But if he drinks from a little cup, you're not drinking out of that little cup.
That's right. But still, you wouldn't want to do it. Remember, like I said before, first of all, some people say if he shakes it really hard, or if he shakes it, so that could be a problem. So we don't want to start up with that type of stuff. So,
if it happened by accident.
Yeah, maybe. But like again, you don't want to. One of the things I mentioned way back is one of the purposes is not only to teach the halachas, but also and to give the concepts, you know, what is a shaila, how to present a shaila, but also how to avoid shailas, mm-hmm. Right? Such a thing that we want to. So you have to know the halacha, or you can't just eat bread and water all the time, right? Right? We have Shabbos and things like that, but you want to set up your house so you stay away from problems, right? So, for example, in my house, if we have something non-mavushal, so, which we do have, the one wine that I could tolerate is non-mavushal. So, all I know is if we have it left over after Shabbos, so my wife tries to get rid of it. Because Ceci comes over and we don't know what happens. Who knows what could happen? And then we don't know. And who knows what happens? And then that wine that was not mavushal, unbeknownst to us, became a problem. So there it goes. I think we discussed a similar idea. Did we talk about this? A dover charif, if you cut an onion with a milchik or a fleishik knife, right? So that onion becomes fleishik or becomes milchik. Right? So a very close friend of mine who's a big posik in New York says, throw out the rest of that onion. Why? Because if you leave that onion wrapped up or whatever in your refrigerator, what's going to happen? your son, your daughter, your uncle, your whatever is going to come. They don't know that's a fleishik onion. What are they going to do? They're going to put on their pizza or something, right? Unbeknownst to them. It's a ticking time bomb. That's what it is. So a similar thing in this case. Will it be us, sir? Would I say to her, no, but, you know, I don't know. It's a ticking time bomb. So that is the big leniency, is yayin mevushel, is cooked wine. So again, we use this a lot, so now you understand. When you're talking about a restaurant, or you're talking about a chasana, they'll serve wine, but it's not going to be Chateau Lafite from Munchies for $120 a bottle. Because the waiters who are non-Jewish can't pour that. I mean, they could physically pour it, but halachically it would be a big problem. So they're pouring wines which are mevushel. And believe it or not, somebody who used to run a winery, who I met a couple of times, winery up north, and they had a wonderful line of wine that was award-winning, even amongst the county fairs and things like that. But I met him a few years later. They sold the winery. And he said the reason why is because they were going for the high end, so they were making non-mevushel wine. And he said, we just couldn't make a go of it because you're cutting yourself out from the wedding restaurant market. Weddings or dinners, which the caterers will order crates and crates of wine, you're never going to get a sale from them because, again, unless it's for a Satmar function and then, you know, the waiters are not Jewish. And so they can't pour that wine. So it just cut into his business. And after a little while, he couldn't do it. I think they tried to make mevushel for a little while. But again, his product was high end. So, when you get Bentley trying to make a Yugo, it doesn't really work a lot of times. And that's what happened with him. Now, you have to realize one other thing. When we talk about wine, wine is anything when you have, even if you have grape juice, and it's, let's say it's pure grape juice, that is wine, but that beverage is still wine even if you have 1/6 parts. In other words, you have wine and you have water mixed into it. So that is still wine until it's lower than 1:6 ratio. Now, you have to realize, this is a little complicated, I think Rabbi Blumenkranz Olah Shalom did a lot of research in this, and that is the wines that we have, many of them have water in them already. So in other words, if you take one of your wines and you add 6 parts of water, you say, well, it's still wine, that's not necessarily true. Because some wines have water in them already. Again, the cheaper wines, they have water in them already. You have to know what percentage of water is already in that wine. Again, if it's a more expensive wine, it might be less likely. It could be just all grape, right? But a less expensive wine could have water in it already. You have to be aware of that, because if you dilute it with water, let's say Pesach or Seder or something like that, you could over-dilute it. Another thing is, when we talk about stam yenam with wine, stam yenam, if you have stam yenam, and so we know by milk and fleishik, so you all know the famous rule, if a drop of milk fell into a big steak, right, you're not allowed to do this on purpose, but let's say, don't get any ideas, Mrs. Freeman, let's say you had a drop of milk that fell into a steak, and you cooked it, the steak might still be kosher. You know the 1/60 rule, right? If it was only one small drop and there was a huge New York steak, right, a whole cow, so then it's less than 1/60, so then we say the drop of milk is bottle, is null. Now, basically, I think we mentioned this before, the idea there is because 1/60, Chazal say, there won't be any taste there. You won't taste the milk in that type of percentage. If there's 60 parts of meat and only one part of milk, that milk will be undiscernible. By wine, we don't say that. Again, because of the strictness we have by wine, so then it's 1 in 100. If you have one part of wine, you have to have 100 parts of whatever, Coca-Cola, whatever it may be, to nullify that one piece of wine, one part of wine. Now, you have to realize, I'm sorry.
Did you do the third part of ketamine?
Oh, I'm sorry, thank you.
Right,
thank you for reminding me. I'm very sorry. Right, there. So we know by ketamine grape juice there is not mavushal, then there is mavushal, but there's also bottles of ketamine wine which have nothing written on it. In other words, again, some on the back will say non-mavushal. Some will say mevushal, according to everybody. But the problem we have is there's a third category where in the back it says nothing. Why? Because that wine was cooked enough, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, so it would be considered mevushal according to Rav Moshe. I think it's about 120 degrees. But according to the Tzelem HaRav, who gives the Hashkacha on Kedem, it has to be the 212. So this grape juice is in between. In other words, it was cooked enough, according to Rav Moshe, to be considered mevushal. But according to Tzelem HaRav, it would not be considered cooked. So you have an in between. So they just don't put anything in it. So you have to be aware that that gets back to the issue I said before. How long does it have to cook, and to what degree does it have to cook? What temperature does it have to get to be cooked? We have that problem today. I mean, it's not a problem, it's an issue. So again, you have to realize you can have a grape juice, and it, let's say from Kevin, it says nothing on it. So if you follow Rav Moshe and a goy poured it, fine. If you follow the same Rav and a goy poured it, problem. Not from Jew. Same thing, right? Thank you. So you have to be aware of that.
Does a barrel of fermenting product that was touched by a fireman become tamieno?
If he touched the wine itself, yeah.
Just the barrel?
No, the outside barrel? No.
There was a fire in the basement.
You just touched the barrel or you moved the barrel?
Just touched the barrel.
No, it's not a problem. Right. Okay, now you have to realize, and we're getting towards the end, I'll have some hashkafa things here, but you have to realize this issue, and that's why I want to spend a whole shiur on it, of wine is extremely important for us, because wine is used as a sweetener in a lot of things. We all know that, unfortunately, to the dismay of many of us, sugar is expensive, until something happens with Cuba. And so, unfortunately, even in Coca-Cola, they don't put sugar anymore. Right? They put fructose, corn fructose. But they use other things as a sweetener in a lot of stuff. For example, like apple juice, we all know that's why little kids like apple juice, because it's very sweet. Another thing little kids like, right, you see it Friday night here in the shul, is grape juice. Grape juice is used a lot as a sweetener into a lot of things. It's not true anymore, but just to illustrate, a number of years ago when slice soda came out, so there was a time when slice soda was not kosher. Now, who would think of such a thing? Answer is Coca-Cola thought of such a thing, because some of the slice sodas were sweetened with grape juice, and it wasn't kosher grape juice. Boom, there it is. There, we have such a thing as in halacha, we have a thing called a milsa de avida de taima. Let me write that down. Milsa de avida de taima, something that's made to give tam, to give taste. In other words, I mentioned before that we have these rules, 1 in 60, 1 in 100, and the concept behind that is that if you have such a small percentage, whatever prohibited matter there was is null because it was so minute. But let's say something gives taste. It's potent. It's powerful. and it gives taste. So then, that thing, that matter, if that matter is usser, and it gives taste, so as long as it gives taste, no matter how small the percentage is, again, if you think of the concept, it's pretty obvious. 1 in 60, right? It's all because we say 1 in 60, milk of conflation, carne, leche, doesn't give taste anymore. But let's say hypothetically, it was super milk. We don't have such a thing. But let's say the classic case is here. Let's say you have something that has a grape concentrate. A wealthy person who I know is wealthy because they have a lot, I don't want to say corner market, but I have a lot of the market of kosher concentrate grape juice. You have to realize what a powerful commodity that is, because it could be used in a lot of things as a sweetener. Genius idea. Now, something that gives taste, so as long as you can taste it, we don't care what the percentages are. Again, think of the concept, it makes obvious sense. Now, where that comes up a lot is by grape. Because like I said, we do have today grape concentrate. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've probably figured that out. There is an issue my wife just bought it home, new product. Knutson's Concord Grape Juice. Has an OU on it, right? So, and it says on there, from concentrate. So, okay, we're leaving aside the issue, you know, this is an old issue about whether you can make Kiddush and Havdalah and all that type of stuff on a grape juice that's from a concentrate, right? We're all used to orange juice being from a concentrate, right? But grape juice could also be from a concentrate. So we're leaving aside the issue of, let's say, mavushal, not mavushal, but let's say you have a grape juice that's a concentrate. It's a grape juice, but it came from a concentrate, right? So they added water to it. Can you make kish on it? That's a big machlokas. Let's leave that aside. But again, the whole idea was this was reconstituted. So now, again, we have grape concentrate. If you have grape concentrate and it's used as a sweetener in something, so again, if that concentrate did not have a really good hashgacha and not cooked, that's dangerous stuff. I mean, it's a very good product, but again, you could get, if you added it to something, that end product that has the grape concentrate in it potentially could be usur. Right? And again, this is a very important issue for us because we know, like, there's issues with medicines like Robitussin and all sorts of things because they have grape in it. Right? Like I said before, you see a lot of medicines that you go to Walgreens or wherever you go, you see a lot of their grape flavors. So a lot of times you have to look, and sometimes on these things there's a hashgach on it. This is why. It could be artificial grape. It might not be real grape flavor. But you have to check for that. Because again, even medicines could be a problem. Now obviously if it's pikuach nefesh, you know, that's a different story. But we're not talking about that. Just to finish, like I start off by saying, wine, you could see Chazal and Halacha is very severe, very stringent about wine. In fact, the Ramah says in Yoredei Asinu Kuf Chaf Gimel that if someone drinks Yayin Esav for Stam Yenam, they need to fast for 5 days. Because it says Geffen 5 times in that area of the Torah. So therefore, there is such a custom. I'm not saying you should do that. But again, you don't see that too much by the Chachmas Sadam says that if someone learned the halachas of wine really deeply, so then if they really appreciate the isser of wine, their hair would stand up on its head, on a person's head. Wine is very, very important. We know we could do unbelievable things with wine, and it could be a downfall to a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff in Kabbalah about wine. Maybe you're not aware of it, and this is where I think maybe some of the misinterpretation of the halacha is, but some people are careful, based upon Kabbalah reasons, legitimate Kabbalah reasons, that if a goy saw the wine, they wouldn't drink it. There's such an idea in Kabbalah, legitimate Kabbalah. Now again, I don't know if this is true or not, but this is, I used to tell the girls in Beis Yaakov, a theory that I had, that you know a lot of wine bottles are smoked. They're colored. They're not clear. Some people use that. In other words, that they're colored. So then if a guy looked at the wine, they didn't really see the wine because the bottle was tinted. Now, that's not really true, to be intellectually honest, because the reason why they do smoke the color, the bottles, is because, as I mentioned before, a lot of things affect non-mavushal wine. Temperature, where it's light, sunlight, is a big destroyer of wine. So if we tint the bottle, it protects the bottle better. And believe it or not, in the limited research I did, in the fancy wines, there's a whole masura about different types of wines. Like you all know, a Merlot has the bottle has a certain shape to it, you know, with the top and everything, has a certain shape. Different types of wine, they have a masura, the different types of wines have different shape bottles and different color bottles. So again, to be intellectually honest, the real reason why they color the bottles of wine is because to protect the wine, also it's shtick, right? You know, it's, you know, our Merlot has to be this shape bottle and this color bottle. Okay, that's true, and to protect the wine. But again, in Kabbalah terms, it sometimes helps according to some, because then the goy is not seeing the wine because they're blocked from seeing the wine. We know how powerful sight is. But again, that's a Kabbalah reason. But that gives you a window into understanding how strict sometimes that we are about wine. Again, and as I said before, wine is a great thing, like anything else in the world. It could be used for very destructive things, and it could be for extremely important, very holy things, like Kiddush, Han Abdullah, Arba Kosos. And as I started discussing, it's also used in the Beis Hamikdash. And Emirat Hashem, we should all be Zocha, Emirat Hashem, that we have the opportunity to have that mitzvah of Yayin Nesach, to pour, have the opportunity to have some wine poured on the Mizbeach, Emirat Hashem, with the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, we should all be Zocha to that, Emirat Hashem. Any other questions, points, or Emirat Hashem, next week we'll get into, the next topic will be Tvilas Kalim, a popular topic here in the show for obvious reasons. I don't know if we'll be able to do it in one. Maybe we'll be able to do it in one class. We'll see. One session. We'll see. But that in meditation will be the next topic. Then hopefully after that we'll get into Hechsher Kalim, which is the big one, which is if you have a kli which became not kosher, either you bought it and it's not kosher, or something happened in the kitchen. So how do we undo that? Can we undo that? Again, that will bring together a lot of different concepts which we've gone into until now. But in meditation next week and maybe the week after, well, the next topic in our session will be Tvilas Kalim. Okay? Shkoach, everyone. Okay.